is Benjamin Betting. You might recognize I'm not Professor Binschulte nor Professor Bacher, but I'm truly convinced that I will bring it up to you maybe close as good as they would do. And hopefully I will ask your question, one of your questions quite often. Anyway, my first talk is about the formal specification of a decentralized task control mechanism. So here's the outline. Quite straightforward. First, I'll give you a little motivation in system reliability, system complexity, why we're doing this. Then I will move forward with the introduction, what's this artificial mode system all about. Then the different types we have of the artificial mode system. We may have asynchronous and synchronous implementations. Then I will show the formal specification we derive now. And then I will show the results, and finally I will conclude the presentation. Okay, why we're doing this? Yeah, you all know, besides some system complexity, today's computers suffer more and more from unreliable hardware. Some reasons might be the increasing integration density, but as well as we have further physical impacts caused by fault detection via radiation, thermal issues, or aging of transistors. So, in my opinion, in order to satisfy all these requirements, we should try to implement systems more lifelike. And when I say lifelike, I mean truly those types of self-fixed properties. Because you are a well-known member of the organic computing community, I guess you all know what right this stands behind self-configuration, self-optimization, self-healing. So I will not truly bother you with the introduction, what this is all about. So I'm moving forward. Well, just to give you a better start of this organic middleware, which we call artificial hormone system, I just give you a first reminder of the biological hormone system. Well, it's also known as the endocrine system. How does it work? Well, it's just it's based on the emission of hormones into the bloodstream to organize or control vital body functions. And the main idea is we don't have such a hormone centralized controlling between these cells which have individual tissues and so on. And that's what we try to adapt. We didn't try to implement the whole biological hormone system by itself. We just try to extract the main idea of a decentralized control as well as an organization. Okay, just as a simple diagram, maybe this is what it's all about. We have two different mechanisms of influencing cells. One is direct effect, which means the emitted hormones just affect the cell itself. So the cell doesn't consider further feedback to the hormone itself. Furthermore, we have the better approach is the interaction between the hormone groups as well as the hormones itself. And if I had to choose one of them, I would say our approach is somewhere in the middle between both of them. Maybe it's just a low level of interaction, but a full interpretation of direct effect. Because in our approach, it's also possible that the emitted hormones by one and processing unit of cord, it's both the same, can affect the cord itself as well as. Okay, that's the main implementation of this artifact hormones, so the main idea. What do we have on hardware level? Well, we have a grid of cores, also mentioned as processing elements. Don't be upset, it means both the same, it's just a processing unit. On such a core is running an instance of this artificial hormone system, which just performs a distributed task control mechanism. Well, it could be performed in software as an organic middleware, or as well as in hardware. We could implement this middleware as well as in hardware circuit, doesn't matter. And yeah, it's self-organizing, which means after initial startup, initial task distribution is found always by the system itself after a dedicated period of time. And furthermore, what is yes, it's possible that we could build so-called organs, which just represent task clustering. So we try to allocate tasks with a bigger relationship closely to each other. And furthermore, it's self-optimization, which means if there is a better processing element in the grid, which is capable to perform one dedicated core, this task would microservice. That's it. Yeah, it's, we also can provide real-time capabilities according to these static priorities, more or less. Just like, okay. Well, the whole function of this decentralized task distribution scheme just works in a closed feedback control loop, which can be, which is defined in three major steps. The first step is the receive stage, where we try to receive all the hormones which are emitted by the corresponding core or the neighbor cores. Then we enter the computation stage, which just tries to compute its own suitability according to the current level of hormones. Then it broadcasts its suitability of the other cores. And then, in correlation, it receives the other modified eigenvalues from the other surrounded cores. And finally, we can take decision whether to take, to drop, or to leave the task on the dedicated core. And finally, in the send stage, we have to commit the state whether we take or drop the task to all the other processing elements. Well, that was quite very fast, but I guess you just have to remember we have three steps. The first step is receive, computation and decision, and the last one is sending of the hormones. Yeah. Okay. First of all, I missed. Let me go back one slide because I didn't mention the three types of hormones. That's pretty important. Well, we have three different types of hormones. One is the eigenvalue, which just represents the suitability of the core to process dedicated tasks. In order to balance these eigenvalues, we use suppressors and accelerators. Well, the suppressor just decreases the suitability of the core, and the opposite accelerators favor the execution of task of dedicated core. So that's how the basic principle works. And now we take a closer look on the implementation of this middleware. For sure, there are two work modes. You can perform this close control in an asynchronous way, as well as a synchronous way. And I have to say, well, sure, it works in asynchronous mode very good. But because we have different problems in the whole system, because all of these hormone loops are processed in different stages on the different cores, which means one core is in send stage, the other is in computation stage, and another one is in receive stage, and so on. So we need to control the hormone exchange in some way that we have to be sure that the decision whether to drop, to take, or to leave the task always happens after all hormones have been received. Otherwise, this leads to inconsistency, or the task allocation is quite as not as good as the optimal. So what I wanted to say is that this asynchronous implementation works quite good, but it needs a lot of memory, because you have to ensure that if one hormone is in one cycle is missed due to chitter effects or what else, you must have backup of that hormone. Otherwise, you take decision upon inconsistent hormone data, and this leads maybe to false task allocation. Anyway, okay, that's the asynchronous HS. So better one is the self-synchronized version, and I've been asked many times for how do you get that, and it's quite simple. We just put a wait stage in front of the main loop. So before every processing element in the grid starts to evaluate the closed control, it just takes a short wait period, which is set up by the hormone cycle time itself, in worst case, as well as soon as it receives one hormone value. So there will also be one grid in the core which enters this point after a timeout, so at least after one hormone cycle time has been expired. And there will also be one element in the grid which reaches that point quite short after it receives any life of any other quantum grid. Well, as you can see, now we have synchronized processing of the quantum loop on every core, but that's not for free, actually. It looks quite simple in this diagram, but for this approach, we do not use any hormone buffering or something else. In fact, this reduces the memory overhead, but for sure, the self-configuration time surely increase. That's obvious. If you have a decentralized task control mechanism with synchronized manner, you will also have problems with the jitter effects. So how to fix that? Well, as I mentioned, I've been asked many times for Benjamin, this looks quite very impressive. Yeah. I'm truly convinced it works, but I'm not so sure that there are no jitter effects in that synchronized version. And I have to say, yes, it's true. Yeah, but can also happen jitter effects in the synchronized version. It's always caused by the same effect that there might be one element that enters computation in the system stage before it receives all of the volume values. So, but first of all, we need a formal specification because we have been investigating that approach many years before, I guess now 5 years already. And we just always simulated that approach, and it's quite good on simulation level. You always see, it works, but you cannot see the glitches inside the system. That's not glitches, but it's quite close what I was going to be. And so we tried to actually specification, but it looks quite complex. But if you take a closer look at it, you will see we have just the three stages anymore. Still have the three stages. Well, we have just receive. Yes, now it's divided between. This is sending, but here's commutation, here is send. Between send is here and receive is already here, so that's the correct one. So this is the delay time at the beginning of every hormone cycle, which is just set up by the maximum communication time between every node. So this is just the time what does it take to send one hormone to another node. Well, basically now I can give a lower technical boundary to that TK, which is mentioned. It's just about, it depends on the communication infrastructure, but if you consider just a non-blocking free communication network like bus concept or something else, it's depends between 20 to 60 nanoseconds, but that's quite a good feasible number. In order to set up the specification quite properly, we now distinguish between the separation of the sending of the value of the components, and furthermore we distinguish between the sending of the and the evaluation of the eager value. And for sure, there is, at the end, we must ensure that every PE in the grid must remain in last void state, void statement, before it enters the loop again. So this must be ensured anytime. Okay? Well, these are just time invariants, which are derived by this different stages in the whole loop. We just have six different types, T1 to T6. And all these states can be described by invariants, and I just show you four of them, because the other remaining two are just stages straightforward. They just say that every time we move one step forward, the time difference is thus increased. That's what I mean. And if I interfere and then I will finally enter, the time difference is much bigger here than here, for sure. It must be. Okay, well, the first one is very important. It's just say that the maximum timing difference between one PE and the other is just set up by this communication time. So I give you quite a feasible number. What does this TK look about? It's it really depends on the communication network you use. Meantime, we use redundant bus concept. That's not pretty efficient, but it works quite well. And so this TK is can set up something like maybe 20 to 60 nanoseconds. Really depends on the communication. Moving forward, well, these two elements are quite simple. It just says if there are if there is processing element which enters. And at this point, as a quasi, when it's finished, it's the initial waiting time by timeout. It also reaches point T1, which just the difference between TO and T1 is just T1 is just set up by T1 plus reaction time of the core when it receives the home. So it's just like wake up core. Okay, the second one is truly simple. It just says that the reaction time can be set up less equal than tau. And tau is quite very small. It's just about what a type implementation about 5 nanoseconds. It's just like a reacting of the core when it receives any type of form. And the last invariant is the most important. It just says, if there is P which enters the weight statement of the weight state of the home loop at the beginning, all other P's must remain in the last state, which is causing this one. So, these are the invariants. This is quite very not a complex formalism, but with this we can describe very well how these jitter effects can be avoided. And so the results of this formal specification when we have a processing element that enters the computation stage, it has received all the suppressors and accelerators in order to calculate its modified equivalent in the correct manner. That's the first variant I think. Second is, if we have a core element which starts to take decision whether to talk to you or take the class, it has sent its own legal value to all the other cores by broadcasting. And then finally, the last element, which was the most important. We now can ensure that if there is a PE which enters the loop again, all others remain in the last weight statement of the former cycle. Okay. Furthermore, what about termination of single PEs in the grid? This might be also a problem because if you shut down a PE, a dedicated PE, and reinitialize it again, you have to resynchronize it with the other processing elements, and we haven't done that yet quite well. We just considered a shutdown of the elements, but that's also a bit tricky because you cannot shut down at every stage of the common cycle. Because why? If you shut it down, and there might be already homons which have been emitted by the core which have been shut down, this might also lead to a wrong task allocation. So one solution could be that we just implement some sort of user snoops, which is quite simple. We just look at the hormone traffic, and if there is eager value of some of any PD in the grid, then we can shut it down, because now there is no option that this moments are still longer will affect the other unless it's this offline. Yes. And that's maybe one approach how we can shut down one P without affect the task distribution in a bad manner. Okay, what about the self-configuration time? Now we can derive a very short equation. This is the former closed control time was set up by 3TK, which just as a reminder, TK was the maximum communication time between two nodes. This is the communication, the self-configuration time was the case for the asynchronous version. But as I mentioned, synchronous work mode is not for free. So this is the equation now for the self-synchronized version. We have this simple tau, which is just the reaction time of a simple core in the grid. Then we have the times for the sending of accelerators and suppressors, sending of the modified EOS, and sending of the equalization suppressor and so on. This is just all the sending stages. And this, term is set up by the wait statements. And we don't take this into account yet because we don't have complete numbers for that part, because it really belongs on the core itself. I mean, if you have a powerful RISC core, this part is quite computed very quickly. And on a lower profile, just a simple microcontroller core, this part will increase for sure. So just we take into account that part. And now we can say just, we can give just a lower boundary for the self-configuration time. And it's set up by 6TK. So we assume 2TK for each of the wait statements. But now we can say, okay, this is a lower limit, which is quite good. We can see it's three times bad as the asynchronous implementation. But okay, we can reach a pure self-synchronized version with no jitter effects with 6TK, but we cannot give our time boundary because it really depends on how long this part will take. We can, for sure, it depends on that part. So at least it will end for sure at one time point, but it really depends on computing power itself. Okay, message consistency is not for free, but we can reach it. So conclusion, asynchronous implementation is quite well, but it lacks in memory overhead. Self-synchronous version satisfies this requirements, but it's not for free. It takes more time to implement that. Now we have a specification of this homing control in order to do further investigations in terms of real-time capabilities. I told you most of these self-X properties we can give self-time guarantees, real-time guarantees in more or less. And for sure now we can determine the lower boundary for the homing loop duration in terms of synchronized version. Future work will be how long does these weights then really take in the real hardware? I said, okay, 60K, maybe 1TK could be 20 to 50 nanoseconds, but that's just more a guess, maybe. And furthermore, we have to extend that PDs at runtime could fail in terms of aging transistors or cells. And for sure, contact starting and termination of PDs. We also consider that all PDs are started at the same time. Okay, this was maybe pretty fast. Do you have questions?
Questions? Yes?
Just maybe, do you have a concrete example that you use this
application? Sure, in the next presentation. I have very well the application design. Just have to show the limitations. We'll bring it down to the problems.
You seem to spend quite some effort to make sure that synchronization and consistency is given. And the reason seems to be that the whole idea of homomorphic systems is that you have a balance of forces.
Yes.
And you have to wait until all the information is there, and then you can act upon this balance. Now, I was wondering, you model your system according to a natural system.
Yes.
Do you have an idea, or have you talked to biologists? What happened? This can happen in the body as well, that you have an imbalance of these hormones. What does it do to me? I mean, my heart rate goes up temporarily, but especially, how does it come back to the equilibrium situation? This could be a model for you to follow.
Exactly, that's a good idea. There might be a point in this approach where rebalance is impossible.
Absolutely.
And we
investigate the system runs wild and goes away.
It just starts to oscillate and never reaches the balance. That's possible. I mean, if you have different types of cores in the grid which affect each other, for sure there can be a breach in the balance of the system. But we also try to investigate it by putting some cores as attackers into the grid. So they injected fatal hormones in order to disturb the hormone traffic. And we could see, yes, there is a point where the system where rebalance is impossible, but then we tried to improve that by isolating such attacks, just by introducing threshold levels of hormones, but the question is how to set that threshold level. That's a good question. So you are absolutely right. There might be a point where the rebalance is impossible.
Absolutely.
We need to take care of it. And first thing could be that we try to introduce a threshold level of different types of hormones. If there is a hormone which is quite higher than the threshold level, just take it, don't take it into account.
So you make it insensitive to a certain degree, and
yes, absolutely. This is not quite a very well solution, but it's one step in the right direction.
Okay. Any other question, or you will save your questions for the second talk? Okay, then it goes.
Okay. Moving on.